Hello, everyone. Happy November, and thank you for tuning in to episode 24 of the Crystal Habit Podcast. For this episode, we're going to return to our Breaking into the Game Industry feature, and we are going to tackle the semi-nebulous concept of game design and how to break into the industry as a game designer. I'm going to have two special guests on this episode. One is William Kerslake, who is a senior designer here at Crystal Dynamics, and the second is Alicia Thayer, an associate designer. So hang in there for just a minute, and we will get to the interviews. So thank you, everyone, for tuning into episode 24 of the Crystal Habit Podcast. As promised, we are going to speak to a couple of talented game designers today. So with me, I have William Kerslake, who is a senior designer here. Hello, William.
Hello.
And then we have Alicia Thayer, who is an associate designer at Crystal Dynamics.
Hi.
So we're going to start out by defining this semi-nebulous concept to people who are, you know, maybe younger in school, trying to figure out where they want to fit in the industry. We have a lot of people who send emails, and they frequently say, you know, I have a great idea for a game, or I want to make games, and that's a very sort of nebulous statement. But it seems like for the most part, they're either talking about writing for stories or game design. That's kind of where they envision themselves. So what exactly, in your mind and experience, does game design encompass?
Want to start?
Sure. I would say that there's three major focal points for game designers. Mm-hmm. You have narrative designers that do that writing thing that you're talking about, and focus on stories and characters and what environment you're going to be in.
Yep.
And then you have your level designers, who are much more structural, architectural. What sort of space am I going through? Where are bad guys going to be? What am I going to do in that space? Mm-hmm. And then your final group are your system designers, who are more along the lines of, well, what do these weapons actually do? What abilities does the character have? Can they jump in this game? Is it automatic? Is it running through spaces where my health regenerates, or do I not regenerate? What resources do I have to collect? And those are the kind of major three buckets.
I would say so. But it's my experience even this far in my career is that the term designer is so nebulous,
yeah.
Right? I mean, so my first job was at Rockstar Games down in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a designer there. Mm-hmm. Right, but that actually meant that I was a scripter.
Okay.
So I basically was a little mini programmer, and I didn't actually do any layout at all. I didn't work in any 3D software at all. I had a text editor, and I had the game, and that's what I did. Right, and my title was designer. My duties here as a designer are significantly different.
Really different.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's a tough word to define, and I think that every company kind of defines it in a different way depending on the needs of what they do, the types of games they make. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, what their culture is.
Okay. Well, then we're going to take a step back, and we'll come to exactly what you do designing here at Crystal in a little bit. But what sort of education and training have each of you received in order to get to this point?
Oh, this is really funny because we have completely different backgrounds.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I like to show multiple paths to the same destination. So
I decided I wanted to work in games when I was around 12 or 13 years old. I was super into adventure games when I was a kid. And I remember having this epiphany when I was very young that these came from somewhere and that there were it was very profound for, you know, like a 12 or 13 year old. I was like, oh my God, people make these.
Yes.
Right. Because I knew I wanted to do something kind of artsy. I had I loved to draw as a kid and, you know, all of that stuff. And then once we got a computer in my house, I was super into computers and, you know, screwing around and programming and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And always playing games. So from there, I mean, I kind of tailored my education towards that. I was really fortunate when I graduated high school that I come from Chico, California, up mm-hmm. in Northern California. When I graduated from high school, the university in our town, California State University Chico, had a budding computer graphics and game design program.
Cool.
So it wasn't there at the time, mm-hmm. but my academic advisor said, hey, if you stick around for a year or so, we'll have this and you can mm-hmm. switch majors. So I declared as a comp sci major. And started that whole path. When I finished my undergrad, I decided I wanted to do a little bit more schooling, so I stayed for a master's
mm-hmm.
and ended up doing kind of a production-oriented master's degree. So
okay.
I directed like a group of, over the course of about a year and a half, like 54 students in a Unreal Tournament conversion, like total conversion project, right?
That's awesome.
And then wrote my master's on that. So my whole education was tailored towards, you know, being here,
mm-hmm.
basically. And that's kind of my background. After that, like, I finished my master's, I started working for Rockstar, and then after, I think it was three and a half years there, I ended up here.
Okay, cool. So Rockstar was your step out of
college? It was a very, yeah.
That's not a bad step.
Not a bad step. I ended up completely by chance applying through their website, and I just happened to have the right set of credentials. They were looking for a junior person, which is kind of rare from what I understand.
Yep.
So I got really lucky in that respect, and they were at the time working on this cowboy game called Red Dead Redemption. I had no idea what it was, nice. And I was like, awesome,
yeah.
Sounds good. So I moved down to San Diego and worked on that, and that obviously did very well, which was pretty yes. awesome. So very atypical start in the industry. I got really lucky. I think there was a lot of right place, right time.
I loved Red Dead, except for the cougars.
Weren't they brutal?
Every time I got on my horse, a cougar would jump out of there.
I did the side quests, so I wasn't responsible for the wildlife.
Never again. It makes me afraid to go hiking.
Yeah. I love that, though. I mean, like, I don't know. I thought that was hilarious.
I did, too. Okay, so how about you, William? Where did you train yourself or educate yourself?
So I joined the industry a little bit earlier, and there wasn't really anything in the way of there wasn't anything in the way of schools that were really dedicated towards game design at that point. I was similarly, though, I was teaching myself how to build games and stuff at home, even through high school, building conversions for Wolf 3D and Doom, mm-hmm. and building my own levels, playing those with other high school kids who would go and hang out. And then after that, there was a small college here in Silicon Valley mm-hmm. that starting a program in 3D art.
Yep.
And so I jumped into that because it was the closest thing I could do and get me near video game companies.
Yeah.
And in the course of, you know, I grabbed everything I could. And in the course of that, I was working as their webmaster for a while just to make some money on the side.
Yeah.
And as in that position, I would see all these companies would say, hey, we need some new junior people. Got a bunch of friends hired at various places, and they sort of pulled me in to Atari, old Atari, when I was in about my second year of school, and at which point I tried to continue to do some school at night.
Yeah.
That doesn't work so well with making games at the same time.
No, I cannot imagine.
And so at some point I just sort of abandoned school bits and then have been making games for the last 15 years.
Awesome. So now that we know how you guys, where you were educated and so on, how you got your first opportunities, so where did you get your start in the industry? We already kind of combined those two with you. Mm-hmm. So how about for you? You said Atari, and then from there, what is your career path going to look like?
It was Atari. I worked with a group of guys, mostly other fellow college students that I knew from school. Mm-hmm. And we shipped a couple games at Atari, and then I left with a group of them, and we formed our own little company called Lightspeed, and shipped a game only in Europe. It was a sort of tumultuous, learn how to build a startup mm-hmm. thing, and we lasted as long as we could. We got one game shipped, and most of the core of that team actually all got hired by Maxis.
Okay.
Worked on a bunch of Sims titles.
Okay.
And then from Maxis, left again to join the indie game world in another startup, and that went for a few years. And as startups do, sometimes they don't necessarily work out.
Yeah.
And then came to join a bunch of people at Crystal.
Okay, very cool. So, can you start out as a game designer in the industry? You can. I think we need to look at this from the perspective of like today versus, you know, versus like when you originally started in the industry. Is this something that you can start out as, or is it something that you need to get your foot in the door and then you kind of navigate to through other fields? Is there curriculum for game design at this point?
So there's a lot of more schools that are doing it now. I've seen that the students coming from those schools have improved a lot from when these schools first were doing it to today. Today there are more positions because teams are a lot bigger. There's a lot more room for junior designers to come in as a design position to begin with. Mm-hmm. When I first started, there weren't many design positions at all. So you needed to pick up other skills, whether it was programming or art. It was actually pretty good to, I still think that there's a lot of value to designers who have programming or art skills.
Agreed.
We spend a lot of time in other packages.
Yeah.
And even if you never end up shipping any art or any code, you can speak to the artists and the programmers.
Absolutely.
You know their language and what they're doing. And so it's a huge benefit to learn multiple skills anyway.
Not only that, but it helps you prototype.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're not at the mercy of the people who animate and, you know, make art assets and things and code, right?
Yep.
If you can do a little bit of it yourself so you have an idea. Right, you can get it on screen very quickly. Go, this is what I'm thinking,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's much easier to communicate than you know a handful of words, right?
Okay, And so from what you guys know of these programs, are they teaching each of those design buckets? Are those design buckets considered specialties? Are they teaching level design versus system design? Or is it just kind of an overall design philosophy?
In my experience from my university, we approached it from a very sort of generalist standpoint. You know, we let people dabble in a little bit of everything, including animation and 3D modeling and texturing and lighting, just to make sure that they had kind of a well-rounded education. And they specialized from there. We had people who wanted to be animators and wanted to be modelers and wanted to be game designers. But they got, you know, a sampling of it primarily in their freshman and sophomore years so that they could kind of figure out, one, which one, you know, really spoke to them the most, and two, because so that they had that foundation, which I think is really valuable. But I mean, in terms of other schools, I'm not sure what they're doing.
Yeah, I think I think most schools start with that as a starting place, at least trying to create a more well-rounded individual in a design field. And part of it depends on, as teams grow for a huge title like Tomb Raider, where you've got a large team working in different parts, you start specializing, and you're going to do specifically this thing because you're going to do that very, very well. Whereas in a much smaller team, when you have whether digital titles or iPhone titles, you end up taking on tons of different roles.
Okay.
So with indie games becoming a much bigger community, there's a lot more people that need to be generalists.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of room for all different aspects depending on, you know, what do you really want to get into.
Okay. So then spinning off of that, where specifically, what are your specialties then? Within the team, what are you focusing on? We'll keep that to generalist terms, by the way. Don't say really what you're focusing on, but like what kind of stuff are you doing from the day-to-day in Crystal when it comes to designing? Whoever wants to go first.
Sure. I focus on on world interactivity, basically.
Okay.
And I do sort of lightweight systems design. I'm a little all over the place right now. I've been doing, like player mechanics. I've been working on traversal. I've been working on like major set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I even do my own little animation and So I'm a little all over the place. But if I were to say I do one thing in my job, it would be I focus on world interactivity.
Do you want to define that a little bit, what that means by?
So that means things that you can touch in the game, things that you can blow up in the game, things that you can directly interact with, what happens when you interact with them, you know, things like that, basically. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
With a leadership role, there's some getting my hands into doing all those things, which I prefer doing. It's fun to actually making the stuff that's on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then lots of running around and scheduling about when are all those things going to actually get done.
All right.
And then presenting all of those pieces.
Okay. What is one of your favorite design parts? And when you are in the thick of it, what do you like to do the most?
Well, because of coming from a background of working on much smaller teams, I really enjoy working on smaller teams where you actually have to do some of everything.
Yeah.
And I originally started, my first job was actually as an artist, as a 3D modeler.
Okay.
So I don't do much of that anymore. But if I can build some things, if I can code some pieces on the side, I've built iPhone games or Ludum Dare jams. And so it's just fun to really dig into any of the pieces.
Okay. So who are you collaborating most with as designers? I mean, it sounds like you're able to dabble in a little bit of everything yourselves, but who are you? We've talked about like the team structure a bit before,
mm-hmm.
but are you guys in like core teams with a bunch of different specialties, or are you working with other designers, or how is the collaboration as a designer?
I would say that there's two major pieces. Very early on in the project, designers tend to work together to try to come up with a direction that things are headed,
mm-hmm.
And make sure that they're all sort of all of their systems and all of their pieces are focused on that same general direction. But post that, you become a focal point for content.
Mm-hmm.
The animations come to you, the art comes to you, the programmers are building stuff that you're going to end up utilizing, and you're sort of the guy who's gluing the various bits together.
Right.
Okay.
So you work with everyone. I mean, literally everyone. Animators, you know, the concept artists, you work with the modelers, you work with the programmers, you work with everyone,
okay.
Because you are getting what they're generating their content into the game and on screen.
Okay. So what's that? This is, I think you just gave me a hint of this. What's the day-to-day like at Crystal? It sounds like you said lots of meetings.
there's a decent amount of meetings. Luckily, with the group that we have, the team that we're working with right now, is all guys who are fairly senior, and we've done this for a while, and so we're able to run really quickly and not have to talk a lot,
mm-hmm.
At least in formal settings. We spend a lot of time at each other's desks looking at how can we make this a little bit better, a little bit, you know, can we speed up how fast we're building some of these things.
Yeah, day-to-day is pretty, day-to-day is really fluid, right? Like, one of the things that's really great about this job is, you know, like, I don't do the same thing every single day. Like, my job changes on a day-to-day basis. I generally do the same sorts of things, but what I'm working on is going to change. Who I'm working with is going to change. You know, it's depending on what I'm going to make that day, right?
Yeah.
So my day-to-day is very volatile in that, in that respect. You know, sometimes I might go meet with a few people, get something on screen, you know, play it, talk, things like that. Some days I might just sit with my earbuds in and, you know, work on something very complicated, get that in the game, test it myself, and that might be my entire day, you know, just music and work. Some days, you know, we're working on presentations, or we're preparing builds, or we're preparing for a playtest. And so usually Will and I are very involved in that, being, you know, like part of the primary design force behind the game that we're working on, you know. So it's kind of never, I can't say that there's a typical day, really, you know.
It's actually fairly common when it, when I talk to anybody in the studio, there's, it's very difficult, even with my job, to say day to day. You really never know,
I don't
like,
know
what's going to happen or what's going to change or so on. So
I respond.
I think that is a, I think that's a plus. It's a benefit for being in the industry is everything.
Absolutely. I think it's a perk.
All right. So I suppose this is going to vary drastically depending on what task you're doing, but are there any standard tools that you guys use regularly as designers? I suppose it changes if you're doing level design versus system design or so on, or are there tools that you use universally?
It definitely changes depending on your focus. Level designers spend a lot of time with whiteboards and pens and paper just trying to get down what you want to do. And then depending on your engine, you're working either in a proprietary engine tool to build your levels, or art packages to clean up some work, or, you know, one of the major engine tools for building pieces. As a system designer, you spend a lot of time in Excel, frankly.
Yeah.
because most of a game can be broken down into spreadsheets eventually.
That's so interesting. I don't think people envision it that way.
Oh, it's not glamorous, that's for sure.
No, no, it's not the sexy version of game design. No. Hang out in MS Office.
But I mean, if you're really into that, like, it's very gratifying, right? I mean, like, getting all those numbers to work with each other is really awesome.
Yeah, okay. Anything specifically that you use? In addition to?
Well, I mean, I don't know if we're going to name drop any software or anything like that. Or, I mean, like, I use graphics packages, you know, like, I use, you know, photo editing software. I use 3D modeling software. I use proprietary, you know, like, in-game engine stuff.
Yep.
Like, a lot of Excel.
So I think that even if even if you don't have access to some of those specific programs, like the 3D modeling software, getting to know the ins and out of, you know, Office Suite, like knowing how to take full advantage of even, you know, very universal programs is something that's
Here's the thing about that. So I'm pretty active on my university's like Facebook message board, right? And so like one of the really common, they get into these like hilarious little flame wars over who's learning the right software.
Yeah.
Right. And I always step in and go like, okay guys, that's silly.
You know?
Because it's not which piece of software you're learning, you know, necessarily. It's that you have fundamentals, right? Like if you want to 3D model, learn how to 3D model. You know, you'll be able to take those skills and those ideas and find the buttons in any piece of software to do what you need to do, more or less, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's important is that you learn how to do that before you try to go pick up another piece of software, or you get concerned about which one's your favorite, or, you know, which one's better or whatever. Like, you need fundamentals first. So, I mean, if you can't learn anything but Lightwave, you know, go pick up Lightwave and learn how to model.
Yeah.
Right?
Get the start. Don't wait around for the perfect tool.
Exactly.
Okay. Good to hear. What other sort of skills should you develop to cohesively work with other people in a studio setting? I always think that this is an important question to ask because working in a game studio is so collaborative. And I don't think people realize that necessarily all the time. So are there any other sorts of skills, just general skills, that benefit you working in a game studio than your vocation-specific skills?
If we're talking about, like, you know, fundamental stuff, learn to work with people.
Yes.
Like, you are going to be working with people every single day of your job. You need to learn how to communicate clearly. You need to learn how to be patient and how to accept other people's ideas, how to take critique. That's a huge one.
Yep.
When I'm working with students, particularly freshmen, you know, like, I mean, they come up with their one idea. That idea is their baby. And you say anything particular about that idea, they get really defensive, right?
Yeah.
They take it very personally. And, you know, like, that's a big hurdle to get over for students and for anyone, right? But, I mean, like, this is going to be a day-to-day thing. You're going to come up with ideas. Those ideas will be critiqued. Sometimes they'll get kept. Sometimes they'll get thrown away, you know? And you can't attach yourself to those ideas. So those are big things. I mean, like, if you can't get over that hurdle, you're going to have a really bad time, basically. Yeah.
It's a good thing to go into, you know, trying to get your foot in the door.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of things that... ideally, you're killing a whole bunch of your ideas before you even bring them to
for
people.
Sure.
The first time that you do go through stuff, it's not going to be any good.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You have to go through the five bad versions of a thing before you can get to the one that's any good.
Yeah.
And there's an expectation of constant iteration in order to get to that point. And you need to be able to both look at your own stuff and go, this isn't good enough. And when somebody else says this isn't good enough and it's not good enough this way, to be able to listen to that and go, oh, you're right. I should probably modify it this way.
Okay.
The design ideas don't all have to come from the designers.
Yep.
They can come from anybody on the team that happens to have something that resonates.
Okay. Good to know.
Actually, I have one more thing to add, too. The other thing I like to really stress is learning how to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds maybe a little elementary, but one thing that you will never stop doing, especially particularly as a game designer, is learning. Like,
yep.
Will and I are constantly picking up new skills.
Yeah.
We are constantly approaching new problems as
That's
like,
great.
Huh, well, I've never done that before, but... Sure, we can try,
yeah.
You know, constantly absorbing new ideas and new techniques and playing new games and, you know, trying to figure out like new ways to solve old problems, things like that. So identifying early, you know, this is my learning process. This is how I learn.
Yeah.
And this is how I absorb knowledge, like getting those things kind of nailed down will be very beneficial, I think, for anyone coming into this industry.
So don't be stuck in your ways either.
No,
like,
definitely
always be
not.
Open to the idea.
No, you're going to be constantly evolving in this job. Yeah. I mean, this is, we create, you know, like... cutting edge games, that's our job.
Yeah,
you
the
know?
Industry changes a
the
lot.
The industry's always changing.
Yeah.
I mean,
once you get used to something,
it's gone.
Time for something else.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you two think is the best part of being a game designer, and what is the most challenging aspect?
It's you do get to really drive where a game goes.
Yep. So ownership
and that level of ownership of knowing, hey, I built this thing. And then people played this thing, and they had a really good time doing that. And, you know, especially if you can make games that are multiplayer, and you get to see people playing with each other.
One of the
most gratifying moments is watching playtests. Those initial mm-hmm. playtests, they're also the most terrifying.
Oh, gosh.
I can imagine.
Because
and sometimes
somebody's
frustrating,
touching
too,
stuff,
yeah.
And you're like, what are you doing? Oh, my God, that's not supposed to work that way. Please don't do that anymore. And then you see them smile, and they're laughing, and they're joking about what they're playing. And that just all that time and effort that you put into this, you realize, you know, this is all so that the person can sit in front of a screen and have a really good time.
Yeah.
And that feels fantastic when you do it right.
And how about challenging? Well, you think, is it both? The playtesting is kind of the most gratifying and challenging. I have to imagine, like, I did playtesting once for Tomb Raider, and mm-hmm. everybody was just sitting and watching me in a dark room, and I was just like... I just felt so much pressure. I'm like, I'm going the wrong way. Like, and they were all just like taking notes. And I felt like they were judging me like I didn't know how to game. But I mean, like, because it's got to be really frustrating for you if you were like, no, go that way.
Yeah, it's difficult because you want to just jump in there and help them and tell them where to go.
Don't you get it?
And
but we can't ship with the game.
Yeah.
So it's really good to see you do that,
Crystal
right?
Crystal Dynamics employee with every
exactly.
game. That would be a package deal. So how about for you then?
For me, two things. One is I am a huge problem solving fan. Like I'm super into problem solving, and in particular collaborative problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to do that every day in my job.
Yeah.
So like I'm perma happy that
yeah.
way. And that to me is one of the biggest perks of being a game designer, is that you're constantly being thrown, you know, new problems, and then you have, you know, like this tool set and this set of people go. You know, and there are no rules, really.
Yeah.
It's just like, go fix it.
Figure out
a solution for it. And my other favorite thing is that, you know, like I said, when I was young, I really wanted to do this. And the reason why I wanted to do it is because I felt that game designers created a world, you know,
mm-hmm.
for us to either play in or escape in or whatever that may be. And to now be in a position where I can make those worlds and offer those experiences to other people is very, you know, like very gratifying for me on a very personal level.
Great. And how about challenge then? What's the most challenging thing?
Oh gosh, that's really, deadlines are extremely challenging,
yeah.
you know?
That's kind of a universal
yeah,
one, like deadlines are.
Yeah, well, the creative industry is really hard, right? Because one, I mean, you're going to be sitting there trying to polish, and it's never going to feel done, but at some point, you know, you have to be done.
Yeah.
And to me, that's probably the hardest, most frustrating thing is because...
Yeah.
You run out of time eventually.
Yeah,
and it may
you
not
have to
be,
eventually put the pen down.
Yeah,
and say
you know,
test
and
over.
You may ship a product and it's got bugs in it and those bugs were your fault. You know, like I've got a few, like I can point to and be like, that was me, you know, but I mean, like it's not so bad. It's just, it's hard.
I can imagine it's tough, especially if you're a perfectionist
right.
and you want the best possible experience
mm-hmm.
delivered. But I mean, like I've heard this a million times. You could polish forever.
You could.
There will always be something.
Exactly.
There's always something that you could fix if
but
you
it
wanted.
Is so painful to watch something on screen that you know is your fault and you know how to fix it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the worst part. It's not a mystery why it's happening. You're just like, oh, yeah, that's wrong.
Okay, so what is the potential advancement of a game designer, and how do your responsibilities scale up as you become more senior? So, I mean, we can just go through actual, you know, positions and just use Crystal as an example.
Sure. I mean, a starting game designer, a junior guy coming in, didn't really, or, you know, is given a limited set. Mm-hmm. Here's a small problem. We want you to solve that particular small problem. And then as they show proficiency, hey, she got these 15 problems done without anybody doing any oversight, mm-hmm. then you can tackle larger and larger problems.
Okay.
And maybe that becomes, if you're a level designer, first it's an encounter in a level, and then it becomes an entire level that you own, then it's a set of levels and a part of the game that you own. And then as you gain in more and more responsibility, it starts to be, not only do you own that level, now you own this whole section of the game, now you own the opening act of the game, and then as you move into more creative direction, now you own what is the whole next game going to be about?
Yeah.
And it's a different, you don't get to directly make any of that.
Yeah.
And so the challenges start to become less about specific game design challenges. How is this particular thing going to work? And more about, do I have the right people working on this particular problem? Am I applying the right skill sets of the team of people that we have to the challenges that we have? And it becomes almost more people management than directly game design skills.
Okay.
But you have to be able to recognize those right game design skills in the people that are working on the challenges that you have in front of you.
So when you get up to like a lead designer role, you're doing more of that management then and less of the hands-on building content?
Depending on the size of the team. I mean, on a giant project, a big console AAA project, like what they saw in Tomb Raider, you don't have time.
Yeah.
There's so many things and so much that has to be built. And you need to be out in front of the rest of the team because mm-hmm. you have this steamroller behind you, this huge engine of all these people that are trying to get stuff done. And if you don't have in front of them, these are the next things we have to do. These are the next problems to tackle.
Okay.
Then that can slow everything down and you're costing people and people are waiting for what's next.
Okay. Have anything to add?
I think that's a great answer. Yeah.
Okay, great. So this is always a fun and challenging one because the idea of like a portfolio is so different depending on what specialty you want to go into in the game industry. So what would you find in an impressive game designer's portfolio? Like what would resonate most with recruitment specialists looking for a designer?
Did you make some games?
Yes. that's a good example.
That's the biggest one, you know? And I mean, it doesn't have to be like anything really like extraordinary, you know? Like, did you make a little iPhone game? Were you working in Unity? And did you make a little side-scroller, you know? Like, what role did you have in that?
So your portfolio as a designer is usually going to be like a finished, polished product.
It doesn't necessarily have to be finished, polished product. I mean, those are fine too. But I mean, like, did you work on a prototype?
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to see, like, have you been getting your hands dirty making content? You know, have you been making levels if you want to be a level designer? You know, like, and you can do that with Unreal, you know?
Yeah.
Like, did you make some Unreal levels, you know? Or were you working in Hammer or something like that? You know, did you make some TF2 levels or whatnot? I would want to see, game designer's hard. You know, because I mean, ultimately, we're just going to sit you down and talk to you. You know, your problem solving skills are going to be probably one of the biggest things that we're mm-hmm. going to hammer on. But you know, I mean, for a portfolio itself, you know, you can put up your paper designs, you know, sketches.
Okay.
You made a world. If that's your big thing, you know, you want to be a world designer, you know, like environment designer, you made a world, like here are your sketches, here's, you know, some mock-ups you did, like here's some layouts, and then here's a prototype of it in Unreal or something like that. Like,
so showing process is important?
Process is huge.
Those are big pieces. The biggest piece now is that there's so many tools out there to let you start building content on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And that you've got, and now with all these schools that are generating a large number of students and a large number of graduates, in order to stand out, you can't just have built your school projects because everybody else built their school projects too.
Yeah.
And there are going to be a handful of people who went outside of that and they completed in one of these game design challenges and they built something for a Ludum Dare, or they just with three of their friends loaded up Unity and they built their own iPhone game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of thing that I want to see. You've done this, you've solved some problems, because there's a whole bunch that you learn when you're trying to make a game, and there's a massive amount more you learn in that last 10% when you close a game out.
Absolutely.
And that that is the biggest chunk, because it's one of those, like, the first 90% of the effort, and then the last 10% is another 90% of your effort.
Getting over the finish line.
Just that last piece is huge. And so even if it's a tiny school project that you then took a little bit further to wrap up and complete, completing lots of small things is a lot more impressive as a new candidate coming in trying to be getting a junior position than, hey, I started this massive MMO with two of my friends and we got nowhere into it, but yeah. We had this huge idea.
The scope was huge.
Everybody has huge ideas, and I would much rather see, I wanted to make a game about a ball that bounced on platforms, and that's it, but I finished it, and here it is.
Yeah.
And okay. That's much more impressive.
Great. That's really, really great advice. I love very specific advice like that. Okay, speaking of advice, we will end on our final question. Do you have any final advice for people who are attempting to enter game design specifically? Can be lessons learned from your own past, things to avoid, things that have worked for you, anything along those lines?
Well, I mean, more of along that particular line is just build some things. Mm-hmm. There's too many tools out there that let you build stuff really fast to not do it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have the opportunity to just go out and build games. I wish that, you know, I had all those tools when I was in college and had free time to build all of these games.
Yeah.
And then separate from that slightly is the idea of you need to find things to explore that aren't the same sci-fi movies as all of your friends currently have, and the same, because we all have these same cultural touchstones. We've all love Aliens. We all watch Terminator. Yeah. And so you end up seeing all the same influences on a lot of game design. And the stuff that really stands out are all of a sudden someone looks at Ayn Rand and they try to tweak that, and you get a BioShock, and it just feels fundamentally different because it came from a different source material.
Yeah.
So hobbies that are entirely outside of the standard, what we think of as the game design world, and the sorts of things that normally appeal to the sorts of people that you really are into games, that especially in that sci-fi realm, that really lets you push out into some spaces where you might go explore something because you happen to be really interested in flowers, or you happen to be really interested in birds. You can bring something then into the game space that comes from a perspective that is new and fresh. And sometimes there's way too much. We play all the same games together. We laugh at the same stuff, and it can get really insular.
So take inspiration from everywhere and anywhere.
And as far away from normal games, like take a week off from digital entirely and go find something that speaks to you. Mm-hmm. And then how can you bring that back into that game work?
I love that.
So probably the biggest piece of advice I have is do not be afraid of failure. Mm-hmm. Learn from your failure and expect to fail over and over and over again. As you're getting started, I mean, I remember when I first opened, you know, my first 3D modeling program, and I made a misshapen eggplant thing. Was like, this is really hard and really complicated. There are a lot of, you know, depending on which software you're using or whatever, a lot of little, you know, bells and whistles and dials and things like that. And I mean, learning what all of those do, and, you know, even your fundamental skills, or, you know, trying to work in Unity, all of those things, those have very high barrier to entry. You know, you need to learn how to code a little bit. You need to learn how to model a little bit. And I mean, learning all those things does take time. So be prepared, you know, to mess it up a few times over. And in the same vein of that advice, keep it very simple. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest, I used to teach freshman game design when I was a grad student.
Yeah.
And I'd always get these little freshmen coming in, and we'd be like, all right, so we're going to make our first game. And I always did paper prototypes first, right? And these guys would want to make, you know, like a big open world MMO, blah, 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 giant game. You know, and I'd be like, okay, so we're going to make Battleship, you know, as you're learning, as you're really, really getting started, you know, stick to what you know and keep it very, very small. And if it feels like it's too small, it's probably the right size as you're getting started.
Yeah.
You know, you can certainly build on that as time goes on. But the last thing that you want to get inundated by is I've got, you know, 30,000 features I can't finish. You know, whereas I could have just been focusing on this one little thing, like getting this ball to jump, you know, or roll around, you know, and then I would have had my game.
Okay.
You know, ambition is fantastic. Aspiration is great, and shoot for the stars, certainly. But as you're learning, you know, like, try to keep it as simple as possible.
Okay. I love that. I think that is some fantastic advice from both of you. Thank you for being on the podcast. I will let people know if they have any further questions, they can send them to me at community@crystald.com, and I can maybe follow up if they have specific design questions. But thank you guys for being on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks.
And that is it for this episode. I hope you guys found this as handy and as insightful as I did. As I said, if you have any follow-up questions or you have questions for a future episode of The Crystal Habit when we're going to tackle a different vocation within the gaming industry, feel free to send them to community@crystald.com. Until next time.